ਵਾਹਿਗੁਰੂ ਜੀ ਕਾ ਖਾਲਸਾ, ਵਾਹਿਗੁਰੂ ਜੀ ਕੀ ਫਤਿਹ। ਚੈਪਟਰ 1, ਦ ਸੈਪਲਕਰ। ਦ ਲੈਵਲ ਵੈਲੀ, ਸਮਾਲ ਐਂਡ ਪਲੀਜ਼ਿੰਗ ਟੂ ਸਾਈਟ, ਬਾਈ ਸਨੋ ਪੀਕਡ ਲੋਫਟੀ ਹਿਮਾਲਯਨ ਰੇਂਜਿਸ ਗਰਡਡ, ਡੀਪਲੀ ਵਰਡੈਂਟ ਵਿਥ ਟਾਲ ਟ੍ਰੀਜ਼ ਓਵਰਗ੍ਰੋਨ, ਡਿਸੈਂਡਿੰਗ ਦੇਅਰ ਫਰੋਮ ਅ ਕ੍ਰਿਸਟਲ ਸਟੀਮ ਆਫ ਆਈਸ ਕੋਲਡ ਵਾਟਰ, ਫਲੋਇੰਗ ਮਿਊਜ਼ਿਕਲੀ ਬਾਏ, ਰਾਈਜ਼ਿੰਗ ਅਲੋਂਗ ਇਟਸ ਬੈਂਕ, ਅ ਸੈਪਲਕਰ ਇਨ ਸਮੂਥ ਵਾਈਟ ਸਟਕੋ ਫਿਨਿਸ਼ਡ by melon-shaped domes and turrets, with golden spires surmounted. Within, with white marble paved flowery boarded, beneath it a tombstone oval-formed, of craftsmanship a marvel, with lovely flowers by loving hands strewn. Free now, the loved life from the cares and burdens of the world, its joys and sorrows, envy and fevered stress, carved over its head the holy Nanak's mantra, Ik Oankar, to the soul eternal divine reality pointing. Following it, the holy Guru Arjan Sloka, breathing immortal passion, yearning after the loved departed. Advancing to the sepulchre, absorbed, a female figure, tall, tall, slim, at peak of youthful loveliness. Sad, pale her countenance, by suffering consumed. With lovely, sorrow-filled eyes, heaving cold sighs, her steps the sepulchre approaching, the gently flowing streams she supplicates, not to disturb the sleep of the dear life within enshrined. Sorrow engulfed, close to the marble slab she fell, strength from her limbs ebbing. A short while after rising, addressing the cold marble, vainly she seeks the departed to arouse, expostulating with it for leaving yesterday's flower offering untouched. Then, sweeping these off, fresh flowers she strews, with the jeweler's precious care in arranging gems. As these she strewed, uttered she the Holy Guru Angad Sloka, redolent of love. Noble it is to die before the loved one's departure. Cursed is breath, drawn after the beloved be gone. Then, touching with devoted forehead the sepulchre slab, for long she wailed her husband lord's separation, never to end. Her sense departing, near the sepulchre lay she, as dead. Came a damsel, following after her beloved mistress's steps. Shocked, she found her lying, as though dead, her breath scarcely moving, the pulse paralyzed, her frame gone cold. To the river running, in its water, a piece of cloth she dipped, laving her forehead, a metal key beneath, between, her teeth inserting, her she revived. Spoke the damsel to the slowly reviving figure, Mistress dear, give not way to this grief, bravely bear it. None his destiny can efface, to the divine will bow your head. The world, dear queen, like a swollen river, is full of eddies, waves, and storms of suffering. Pray, let not these engulf you. Discard this fruitful sorrow. And to your queenly duties address yourself. As day shall come, a day shall come, my beloved queen, when we too shall depart and leave this world, as those we love. Why wail over the inevitable? At those words, the lovely recumbent figure for a moment was all a tremble. Then, with a deep sigh, thus she spoke, Life after the death of those we love is worse than death. Death afflicts only once. This sorrow is a daily torment. Sinner that I am, living after the beloved, while my Lord lived, with this body was I in love. Entering into the mystery of his self ever, never. A saintly being he was, living ever in the Guru's sight. The secrets of this world and the next to him were clear, his soul transparent as crystal. Involved in Maya, of reality was I unaware, thoughtless. Yet, in the generosity of his heart, was he ever gracious. Even though his path I did not tread, came a day when his self in all its glory to me he revealed, that into a moth round the lamp turned me, grating in ecstasy. My closed eyes he opened, and were removed heaps of concealing straw. What saw I? A veritable god, a devotee, a self all illumined. Like the humming bee got I intoxicated, like the musk deer delirious. Ever after this was I restless in his love, like a pigeon rolling about. Then came a day when to the eternal realms he departed, leaving me behind. He is not dead, eternally he is alive, ever in bliss. In his joy, my joy I feel, yet has separation tormented me. Put me in agony as fish thrown on sand. Day and night for a sight of him I yearn. I wail, thou were light, blind of sight was I. Tears my raiment keep wet, like showers of sovereign. Comes then to my mind Holy Guru Arjan's prayer, if our true friend thou be, forsake us not for an instant. My heart by thee is charmed. When thy sight shall I have? With these words, suddenly she rose, and towards the stream with measured steps moved, her eyes dripping with tears, like dewdrops, shaken from flowers as blows the breeze. Chapter 2. The Statue. Over the mountain were spread dark, lowing clouds, black and massive like elephants reclining. Amid these dazzled the rising sun's red light. It rose the resplendent sun, of dazzling hue like molten gold. Under its early light was moving along with swan step the cherished figure of Rani Raj. Came in view a lovely garden along the bank of a stream, by a hedge of wild rose surrounded. All around, a trestled wall of white marble, facing her a gate with lion figures decked, a marvel of workmanship. Within a garden full of flowers of various hues, that she picked and in her lap treasured. A small tank, made of marble white and sable, filled by water of the stream, emptying at the other end the garden to irrigate in small channels. In crystalline sheen the water played. Long the bank of the tank she sat, bathing the flowers. Of these lovingly she made single and multiple threaded garlands. Then, contemplating the loved life departed, sorrow-struck into the water she stepped, bathing the garlands. In piteous wail, on the loved departed she called, thus crying, shedding tears in the garden fragrance like she moved. Over a platform of red stone, she saw erected a chamber. On a white pedestal stood a statue, a handsome riding figure astride a galloping steed. The rider, in mid-youth, approaching 30, a handsome heroic figure of expression saint-like, living ever in sight of the Creator, quaffing elixir of the name, symbol of the Lord, a truly devoted disciple of the Guru, from early youth, a picture of piety. Demented with sorrow, Raj this figure viewed, making piteous wail, kissing the figure's feet, the stirrups, then with garlands covering it over. The statue she circumambulated, unsatiated. To it vain appeals she addressed, to lower its head for her to kiss. Then, overwhelmed, head a whirl, to the ground she fell, a stone lying over the stone floor, a recumbent statue at foot of the statue equestrian. As thus a considerable time she lay, approached her companion damsel, calling the flower girl, with her was she cross, for not attending the Rani as over the garden she wandered. Then approaching the unconscious figure, gently she rubbed it to revive. The flower girl running to the queen mother, informed that her daughter queen unconscious lay. In motherly anxiety, the lady for the garden set out, in palanquin, seated, attended by her maids, a physician accompanying them. The unconscious figure they picked up and to the palace brought, with gentle rubbing motions, reviving it. Then essence of burnt-out gold they administered her. To joy of all, she revived. Yet was her heart full of the agony of suffering. Chapter 3. The Necromancer. As came the evening, Raj still was sorrow-drenched, heaving sighs, eyes copiously flowing, said her mother in deep agony of heart, "Beloved daughter, this unavailing sorrow discard. Never return the dead to this world of suffering. To wish otherwise is pining death to invite. Lay not your life waste thus. To your queenly duties return. To heart sorrow-stricken work the best healer is. Replied Raj, Mother dear, time, no doubt, forgetfulness of ordinary pains brings, but not of love, whose essence timeless be. How may time, that is mindless, the spirit's yearning cure? Think not your child demented. In the tomb there lies only clay. Not for that will I, but for him who is my heart's lord. As rises the tide of love, by it am I carried away, and earth and sky scour for him. Unavailing is my search. Pray I that he, made all spirit, search me out. With these gushed her tears in ever larger torrent. The elder Rani, deep in anguish, called the Divan, a man of sapience and experience, beseeching him for the youthful Rani to find a cure. The faithful functionary, with folded hands, made submission. Exalted lady, all my life the salt of your house have I eaten. Each hair of my body loyalty to it proclaims. Any service that I am capable of would I gladly render. Said the Queen Mother, You know, Dewanji, our former lord, when his time did come, to Surat Singh bequeathed the state. A worthy successor he proved, yet cruel time spared him not, and at height of youth, to the eternal realms he departed. The state without an heir was left. In this state was the burden of rule on Rajgar's tender shoulders placed. Sikhs, you know, favor not a woman to rule, yet our neighbors dared not interfere. Afraid of the might of the Sikhs among whom had Raj married, Rajgar, such was the name she took, is wise as youthful, and ruled the state well, but the agony of separation and love gripping her, from her royal duty has she slipped away. Building a tomb of Surat Singh, did she then command a statue of him to be sculptured, which in that lovely garden was placed. A strange absorption over her has come. Each morning from the palace emerging, towards that sequestered spot she proceeds, alone, like a common country lass. Reaching the tomb, into wails and cries she breaks, piteous, heart-rending, often unconscious falling. For hours, lonely she sits, speaking to none. Only Radha, her loving maid, follows after her footsteps, attending from a distance. Now, our trusty Dewan, tell me what in this state we do, how to save the kingdom. Said the Dewan with humility, Exalted mother, the departed Maharaja, may he abide in Swarg, was to my mind mistaken. Sadhu Singh, sire to the valiant Surat Singh, a saintly man, yet was of lowly origin. In the conflicts with the tyrannical Turks, came many of that tribe to our state, in the hill fastnesses seeking asylum. Among these was Sadhu Singh, the late Maharaja, deeply pious, to Sadhu Singh repaired, asking for the boon of a son. This Sadhu Singh induced our king to repair to their religious assembly, Satsang, from which now no way could he be dissuaded. With passage of time came more and more into our realm of the tribe of Sikhs. This seeing was I alarmed and warned His Highness. So much was our royal master with Sadhu Singh taken that my words on deaf ears fell. Came a day when the royal child Raj to Sadhu Singh's son Surat Singh in wedlock was offered. I cried out, warned my royal master, still to no avail. Said I, We are high caste Rajputs, he a low caste Sikh. Think of your noble lineage. Patch not his straw hut with our ivory. All my entreaties went unheard. The neighboring royal houses, too, disapproved of the proposed match, which yet the Maharaja finalized. Surat Singh, on ascending the royal gaddi, yet forgot not his roots among the Sikhs. Their quarrels with the Mughals he made his own, went among them and fell fighting. Exalted mother, all this has come of disregard of my advice. The young Rani, to my mind, is possessed of spirits. The elder Rani, her face turning wroth, told him not to rake up the past, nor run down a saint like Sadhu Singh. He sought not our daughter's hand for his son, but nowhere else could we find a noble youth to match him. No, of the noble Khatri caste he was, one who the holy Guru's Amrit had taken, What a noble ruler he made, yet what avails against death? On the field of battle, hero-like he fell, such death the Sikhs seek, even as the Rajputs. In Dharma Yodh he fell, defending faith. So, my trusty Dewan, seek not to undo what is done, nor such noble souls to traduce. Tell me what now in this predicament we do, said the Dewan, for my words, candid and faithful, beg I forgiveness. My loyalty spoke, not the cavilling mind. Now, for the youthful Rani, seek we a holy man, whose power of her malady may cure her. Was a Mohadan fakir, practicing necromancy called, who, in a secluded spot, performed 40 days' magic rites, in their tongue called Chila. Many were the occult practices he performed, with meat, vermilion, and such other articles, as came Radha to know of him to her mistress, this she imparted. This made Raj anxious over the fakir's incantations. A seeker after lucre he might be, one who has the state secrets might give out, and emboldened the neighboring rulers to make invasion. At once she ordered the prefect of Jandarmis, this fakir, to throw out of the state, with penalties harsh on daring on return. And this the Dewan learnt, astutely he realized, Raj no madwoman could be, or one spirit-possessed, but truly love-inspired. For no, love makes not one demented, but the mind illumines, and fills the heart with sympathy and compassion. Love is like rain from heaven, making all that grows verdant and full of life. Thus ended this episode. Chapter 4. The Chamber. Chandargarh, loving Queen Mother by deep anxiety gripped, watched the woe-begone state of Raj, who abjured food, sleep, and rest, into yearning for her departed husband fallen. Not widow-like, blank sorrow was hers, but a passion, a yearning for union. As day declined, came the dusk of evening, followed by night's darkness, came the time for the Guru's evening prayer of Sodar Rehras. With the message of gathering up the mind's faculties, the multifarious pursuits day scattered, came from on high the adjuration, with meditation on the Lord, begin night's rest, which at the ambrosial hour break. This evening's prayer, the whole night long, your thoughts should guide. In this hour, meet day and night, inspiring man with his Creator to find union. As past the evening, came a maid, looking for the Queen Mother, in a chamber absorbed in prayer. Respectfully, supper she announced. Asked the Queen, have you informed Raj? Replied the maid in all respect, nowhere have we found her. Unavailing are all our efforts. At which the lady, expostulating with her for laxness in duty, the maid Radha made reply, never, noble queen, have I left her alone, and been with her as Basire with frock's fold, or betel nut with the leaf. Yet today, like fragrance, has she vanished, unseen. With heart plunged in anxiety and perturbation, a search was made. Loud wails did the mother raise, lamenting her lonely state, even like a hollow's reeds. Raising her hands in prayer, the Lord she beseeched, to send to her lap her dearest child. Arose from afar a sweet sound, plaintive, tear-drenched, like that sharp arrow point pierced that heart. The Rani, fixed thereby as deer by the hunter's horn, or the snake by the girdpipe. All ears listened for it. Then rose and followed it as iron the magnet. To a maze of chambers it led, kept usually shut after the old Rana's death. Surat Singh sometimes here to meditate retired. To this secluded spot repaired Raj, like her departed lord also illumination to seek. Marvelous sight the old Rani's eyes there beheld. Near a couch, bedecked as of old, was Raj in prayerful meditation kneeling, eyes closed, hands folded, a very figure of marble. From her lips came dulcet sound of holy song, at which the queen transfixed stood, forgetful of all around. The song that from Raj arose was the holy Guru's hymn and praise of the Lord, the divine charmer, beloved. It breathed yearning and passion for union. In words of humble import, had the holy Guru to the Lord's feet dedicated himself as devoted handmaid to her master, praying for a sight of him. Thus singing came on deep midnight, when the world, enwrapped in sleep, lies. Yet stood Raj in that attitude, loving, devoted. Such was her love for the Lord that made her a true Sati. Sati is a faithful wife, immolating herself on the Lord's pyre, fixed on deathless love. Rose from the mother's throat a prayer, loud and clear, a blessing to her child, at which was broken the ecstasy of Raj. Deep was her sorrow at causing this pain to her mother. The mother bewailed her sorrow, the suffering of Raj, the neglected kingdom. Soon followed a loving embrace that brought together mother and child. Said the Rani, "Leave not me in stealth, dear child, and add not to my suffering." Chapter 5. The Ascent. Said Raj, "Mother dear, in turning thus to solitude, am I helpless? Behold the sun in the sky, which when it sets, vanishes with it the day that it made. The beloved Rana, like the sun, was in whose light shone I, like the day. With his disappearance am I still alive, cursing myself for living while my beloved sun has set. As this thought arose, lost I my senses, and lay as one dead. Felt I then as a spirit disembodied, and skyward took flight. As the spirit flew, the terrestrial earth it beheld spread below. Palaces, forests, gardens, rivers, and the cherished tomb. Maids and servitors, your own self, my inert body lying, all I beheld clear. As skyward my flight I took, all around saw I spread effulgence. With the breeze blowing, each moment vibrating like a musical string, as further and further higher I arose, saw I millions of beings like to myself, disporting in the blue of heaven, the world beside their beauty a very heap of impurity, all rippling with joy, like lotuses abloom. Amid these forms came rushing to me a form of beauty, and in tight embrace did hold me, in such love as among sisters obtains. Such joy her embrace brought me, yet was my heart in suffering, in memory of my Lord. To her my query I addressed, "Where, dear sister, abides my departed saint? In what sphere?" She thus made reply, "In Satchkhand, the realm eternal he abides, and the essence divine. Abides there the formless Lord, from Maya taint free. That spot is verily hub of the universe. No spot that, yet embraces it in all spots. Thy beloved. No spot that, yet embraces it all spots. Thy beloved spouse's devotion at the divine portal is rewarded. His life pure, spotless, of a holy dedication full, with a spirit of sacrifice imbued. Amid the world he abided, loving humanity, but like the lotus from its taint kept free, abides he now in the Creator's essence, the center of eternal bliss." In wonder I asked, "Where is that realm? How far?" This to silvery laughter moved her. Said she, "Sister dear, haven't you read the holy Guru's Jap, where in 37th canto he avers what that spot is? Says the holy Guru Nanak, in the realm eternal abides the formless Lord, casting his glance of grace. Comprehended therein are all the worlds, endless their description. All creation therein abides. The Lord over it watches in bloom of joy. Saith the holy Guru Nanak, hard as steel is its description. This hearing, to her with folded hands I made appeal. Sister dear, in the holy Guru's name, of that realm show me a sight that my beloved Lord I may behold." Replied she, "Sister dear, inaccessible is that spot. Yet take you, I, to the farthest point that within my reach may lie." Then, as we arose, came a spot, gleaming as crystal, beauteous, heart-delighting, with wondrous vegetation overgrown, bearing fairy flowers and fruits, a realm with joy replete, with bliss, love, and celestial laughter rippling. This, Mother dear, was the land of heart's desire, of joy supreme, of holy music, love beyond reckoning. Thought I, perhaps my love here may I behold. My thought conjecturing, said she, your love from here is far. This, the realm of enlightenment is, the land up to which may consciousness rise. Then, seeing me mystified, the Guru's cantus, those number 35 and 36 from Holy Jup, she recited, wherein had the Guru recounted the marvels beheld by those that the world's taint shed off, the realm infinite, a species beyond reckoning, infinite. And this realm blazes forth enlightenment, in harmony, celestial and miraculous joy. As to these divine words I listened, was I transformed to a disembodied self, like what there was manifest. This, a world of beauty with enlightenment, penetrated. Beauty here, from all desire was freed, with joy and enlightenment abiding. In this realm of beauty indescribable, the beings were of the world, yet transcending it. Then above this realm we rose, my companion subtler, more joyful, more effulgent growing. Nothing here can have access, she said, neither air nor vibrations ethereal. This the realm above Indra's Vaikunth, fashion here is eternal beauty. Beyond compare, none it may describe, except in the Guru's holy word in Jap. This is the realm of holy endeavor, fashioned all in beauty, beauty beyond compare. Fashioned herein are understanding, enlightenment, the awareness celestial of gods and siddhas. All that is manifest here, said she, is beauty unembodied. Here, thought I, would my lord be in residence, beholding with divining eyes my thoughts, said she. No, not here, sister dear. Fly we farther off. Of this realm, beauteous, were the denizens, pure spirits, without grossness and taint of body. Such is the effulgence here, said she, as puts all other effulgence to shade. Here abides the mighty with the Lord, whom he pervades. He reproaches not death. This, the realm, beyond attributes, below the unattributed essence. All we behold here of the divine beauty is reflex, yet beside the divine essence. This, sister, know thou, is realm of grace, grace limitless, reigning endlessly here. Here abide those cherishing love for the Lord that beyond reckoning is, their deeds reckoning annulled. Here abide they in joy beyond Maya's guile. Duality here approaches not, like the sun's effulgence shines this realm, flashing on to the highest. This realm, said she, is Japji's holy words, is the realm of grace, full of might. Here abide God's devotees alone with him, the God-dedicated heroes, wrapped all in praise, beyond death and Maya's guile. Here abide devotees, realm on realm, in holy joy absorbed. Then further she elucidated this realm, saying, beyond limits of time and space is this realm, the very limitless divine presence. Thought I, perhaps my love here may grant me sight, said she, not here, in such kind, the realm eternal he abides. This realm and the next are one united, yet indescribable is this mystery. Thy eyes keep open, and the sight of such kind behold. Chapter 6. The Vision. Rajgar then exhorted her mother dear, reverently to be seated, to listen to what next she had beheld. The mother, sitting down in the reverent pose, hands folded, was all attention, the account of such kind to listen. Mother dear, Raj began, as with open eyes I gazed, an unearthly effulgence lit my eyes, limitless, beyond calculable extent, millions of lightning flashes, with brilliance combined, before that vision appeared dim. To describe that sight have I neither imagination nor words. Around this brilliance was spread a joy beyond power of senses to grasp, subtle as fragrance around the rose. Said my companion, beyond this point can I not proceed, nor take thee along. This the country of thy beloved spouses, such kind, the realm eternal, from my attaint free. Here abides thy Suritsing, here such alone, reach as by Maya are untouched. Above mind, intelligence, consciousness, and egoism risen, so also beyond causation and the gross body has he become pure soul. Here come those that the self have realized, thereby realizing their maker, to him united. Here in the divine essence they abide, those that approach this state, the devotees of God, to him inalienably are united. Such up to this spot can rise, not beyond. Then, mother dear, overcome with love, to that soul sister I made a bow, in gratitude for bringing me to this city of bliss. In a spate of words, into ecstasy of joy I broke, in this wise, to this city, sheltering my love, am I a sacrifice. This the lake, the beloved on it, the swan. Here in supreme joy he abides, engulfed as by its waves. From here came he to earth, to the world to bring good. Came he to do good to this world of selfish guile, whose denizens in mutual aggression and violence keep it embroiled. Here to an insignificant creature, myself was he united, and ennobled, exalted me. Much did I utter in praise of him, and denigration of myself. A swan, he left the world of crows, pearls to peck at. Yet lies it in the Holy Guru's power to turn crows into swans. Yet lies it in the Holy Guru's power to turn crows into swans. To redeem me, a sinner, he came, and to high heaven drew me. Absorbed in these cogitations, made I a supplication for a sight of his effulgent self. Prayed I, in touching tone, to reveal himself to me by the agony of separation tormented. In the name of the Holy Guru Nanak, image of truth, I supplicate you, willed I. As thus I supplicated, beheld I the effulgence grown a millionfold. In the realm of such kind, rising like a tempest, visible in this blinding light, saw I the 10 masters, the holy gurus, all in one flash wrapped, indistinguishable, each as light from light. This sight left me mute, from head to toe, with the passion of sacrifice imbued. With this vision was lost the feeling of self. No self, or not self, was there. In a tremor of joy lost I all feeling of self, where was all desire annulled, all was bliss, fulfillment. Chapter 7. The Descent. Resumed Rani Raj. Mother dear, in an instant, faster than a lightning flash, vanished that vision. To the Lord Eternal, Akal Purakh, am I grateful. Each hair on my body, a tongue eloquent with gratitude for the sight he granted. As from my ecstasy I recovered the celestial damsel, my companion I saw standing by my side. In fervor of love to her bosom she clasped me, saying, Sister of my soul, I and you are one. Be not under illusion, we are different. Not we only, the whole cosmos in unity and harmony is bound in the Creator. One to the Creator united is with his creation in harmony too. One in egoism bound from the Creator, keeping alienated. Those bearing devotion in heart alone to the Lord are united. Not such as abjure action are to him united, but those bearing love in heart. As says the Holy Guru in Sukhmani, In such deed lies true emancipation from desire. Then to the seeker each blade of grass holds the vision divine. One at this station arrived, nothing beholds but the Lord. Such a one spontaneously then in good is engaged, inspiring others to serve. These mysteries to such come as bear pure minds from the world's taint freed. These esoteric secrets, sister, that to thee have I imparted, are not idly to be told. Worldlings with selfishness imbued, that mouth empty praises, with these to spiritually make claims false and spurious. Dear Raj, not separate from each other are we, as branches on the tree, whose leaves, buds, and flowers, distinct to view, yet at root are united. Even so in the Lord are we one. These mysteries, dear Raj, on your mind shall flash. From the blessing of one holy, thy spouse in carnal life, then hinted she departure, at which instantly downward we glided. Yet as my way earthward I made, a fragrance haunted me of the vision I had seen. A delectable taste in my mouth struck, as words of thanksgiving to the Lord I uttered. Now, as the realm of endeavor, this terrestrial world we entered. That effulgence grew dim. Now, as the realm of endeavor, this terrestrial world we entered. That effulgence grew dim, said my companion, sister, of thee must now I take leave. This second parting to my heart was lacerating. In words of entreaty I asked her yet to stay. Said she, in words of wisdom, sister dear, shouldst thou seek union to which no end shall be? Be thou, as was thy Surat Singh, whereby the realm eternal he entered. The realm of eternal love it is, where all who enter are forever united. As thy spouse, so I from thee never shall be far. With these words from my sight she vanished. With her also vanished light. The shades of dusk appeared. Passing through dark space, where found I myself? Here in this mansion, amid my sorrow and suffering. Gone was that joyous vision, and the dull everyday world appeared. Then appeared a serving man, who to my Lord had rendered service faithful and true. Him I asked to furnish this chamber, even as in life my love was wont to use. Here I repaired, engaged in thoughts of him, when, mother dear, you surprised me. To you, mother, have I caused pain, which, forgive me, his love calls me, nothing from there can draw me. Mother dear, be you indulgent in your erring child. Chapter 8. The Absorption. Now dew-drenched was the night, with stars studded, that looked like eyes of the universe, in yearning expectation, wide open. What were these eyes looking for? The tear-stained eyes glistening. In these thoughts was Raj absorbed, looking first at the dewdrops, raising eyes from these to the starry heaven above. The mother at the daughter looked in a gaze of wonder at the narrative she just had recounted. Soon the eyes of both closing outward at that vision were fixed that mother and daughter shared alike, each into the eddying river of wonder fallen, each wrapped in silence of the night and her vision. Raj, love-inspired, on her dear spouse fixed her gaze, to love transmuted, like iron in forge turning fire. Around the motionless figure of mother and daughter was spread the silence of gloom of night. Absorbed in this vision, slipped the night, and came day with its manifold noises. Startled, woke the mother and shook her daughter awake. Arise, Raj, by the ocean of night were we engulfed. Now arise, day has come, and its own tasks brought. With that, amid crowd of maids, each relieved to find her mistress back, the broad stairs they descended into the mansion. Chapter 9. The Garden. A lovely garden, from the hillside descending in sloping terraces, amid which a cool, palisade stream flowed. Its water from the hill descending in winding streams, from below huge boulders issued, sometimes in short, musical falls filling the streams, then eagerly over the garden plots flowing. To the sensitive eye, its movement looks so joyous, so full of love, expending its own life the garden plants to nourish, like a noble soul to bring life to others at sacrifice. Within the garden was a small marble tank by a marble canopy surmounted, with its 12 doors, a lovely pleasure spot. Here, as Raj sat, her heart filled with memories of her lord, who of evenings sat here, enjoying the garden scene, came mornings and into evenings melted. Yet to Raj came not her lord's tidings. Alone she sat, as hour after hour passed, in that sorrowful mood enveloped, as absorbed thus she sat. Flashed on her eyes a vision from the high, of a uniquely beauteous throne, over which sat her love. Like the sun it flashed, brightening the whole earth, that in wonder put her, absorbed in this vision, her lord she supplicated, never from her sight to depart. Sudden, as thus she sat, appeared her mother, and viewed her child, with eyes wide open, taut with ecstatic love. Said the elder Rani, "Wake up, dear child, welcome news I bring to thee." Chapter 10. The Missive. As Raj from her vision was shaken, all that all her sorrow had effaced, sudden her eyes she opened and beheld, instead of her love on the resplendent throne, her mother by her side standing, full of wailing sorrow with her mother, she thus expostulated, "Today, mother, have you plucked me away from my love, to whom you gave me in holy wedlock? This contrary is to parents' way, who seek to make their offspring's conjugal life blessed and happy." The distraught mother, all ignorant, thus reproached, harsh judgment on herself made, "My child, ignorant as I am, my eyes by Maya are sealed. I know not of the spiritual realms to which you have ascended. Forgive me, came I to bring you a welcome gift. A letter written by her love to you from field of battle, in his own blood. This a maid from Kalar Raja has brought. Take this, solace to your heart it may bring." As eagerly with trembling hands Raj caught it, her eyes tearful, the writing she could not see. To her forehead and eyes, in reverence she pressed it, trying to read it. Again, where her eyes tear-filled and blurred, lay the script. The mother, beholding her state, took the letter and offered to read it out. Thus read out the Rani, "This is Surat Singh, writing from the battlefield to the Princess Raj. May the holy Guru Nanak and Guru Gobind Singh bless you. Here am I engaged in Tarmyud. Himself did the holy Guru adjure his followers in holy battle to engage. As I write, an arrow my chest has pierced, with blood flowing that no way can be stopped. My strength ebbing, the last moment staring at me hard, this letter to you with my blood I write. The Kalar Rana by me has stood, rendering a true friend's service. Dear Raj, when I am gone, take you him to be in my place. Forever from you am I parting. You, a lone female in this harsh world, a protector shall need. To his care give yourself, to you bid I the last farewell." In words of the holy Guru's Fateh, thus ended the letter with Surat Singh's name subscribed. On hearing this message, a revulsion arose in Raj's mind. "This is some fraud," to her mother she said. "My lord, such a message would not send. At the very sight of this blood on the paper, my own blood revolts. His blood, should it be his, should call forth from my blood a new response. Were it his message, would he bear regret at death's approach? The holy Guru Gobind's image he kept before his eyes, who begged of the Lord noble death on battlefield. A knife, he used to say, all believing Sikhs in such kind abide. In the realm of bliss, where eternally they live, that parting is eternal. Never would he aver to the Dharma, inspired death no terror holds, who accept it as divine will. God is the keeper of all, he told me. How then to another man would he entrust my wheel? So, mother dear, some stratagem here is involved. This Raja of Galar to Six is not friendly. Never has he lifted arms against the Turk, he who never loved his pleasure palace. Now through this fake letter seeks my body and our state. This princeling knows not, a Rajput's daughter am I, into the Guru's Amrit initiated. Ignorant of this, this man seeks on me to play his guile. No, my Dharam, my faith with the Lord, to my last breath shall I cherish. Never shall I be false to fidelity's oath. In the world's eyes through a widow, no, in my Lord's memory am I still of wedded bliss. He lives, and his memory I cherish, as Kalariyam in my eye. Then turned the youthful Rani to the maid, who Kalar's message has brought, go tell your master, my lord to me is living, no way dead. Your sister am I, cherish me ever with sisterly love. No, when facing the holy Guru Granth in wedlock, we were tied. Said my lord to me, forever shall I be thy guardian. This vow before the Guru, holy Guru Granth he made. Or I, a Rajput born, my chastity to barter, to your race shall it bring shame. Your sister's chastity have you tested. Let this test satisfy you. No, I am twice tempered steel. The holy Amrit has made me. Never shall it bend. So, brother dear, no fear have I. My protectors, moreover, are Punjab Sikh heroes. Brother, as your sister, I adjure you, the Sikh fold, to enter. Why should my brother be deprived of the bliss that the sister has? With this was the maid dismissed, with honors to a courier due. The mother all this while sat silent, contemplative, filled with pride. Thus she prayed, Holy Guru, with thy protecting arm, succor my child in her tribulation, to assume her royal duties, inspire her. Chapter 11. Ascent to Fairy Palace. Atop a steep mountain was a reputed fairy palace, where lived, it was reported, a being mysterious, that descended not ever. Asked the Rani of Radha, Dear Radha, tell me what you know of the fairy palace. Radha made reply, On the steep mountain, atop a dangerous ledge, hangs this palace where lives the fairy, reported by some to be a witch. Dangerous to mortals, none her touch has withstood, but our departed lord, Surat Singh, at whose feet this fairy made submission. Dangerous, fatal it is to have sight of her. None but our departed Rana returned therefrom, and hearing which Raj made exhortation, Radha dear, there must we go. If a witch, she no more is a witch. The sight of my lord into a saint must have turned her. Go there I must. You with me shall come. Saying this, the path topwards she took, Radha, the faithful maid, accompanying her. Some flowers they took with them from a garden nearby. Some distance away was a waterfall, pellucid, foaming on top, making music loud and clear. Passing this, a steep, narrow path they took, Radha after the Rani following. Further on, even this path got obliterated. The way was all scattered, boulders, where footrest was hard. The mountain's side rose steep, defying ascent. Getting out of breath, Radha sat down, some rest to take. Said the Rani, Radha dear, hard is the path of love. To have sight of the beloved, lose not heart. This is the path by my loved lord sanctified. This we take, defying exhaustion. So, bound by the tie of love, Radha arose, and the upward path they resumed. As further they went, the air became cool, agreeable, driving out the body's fevers. This drowsed them, bringing blessed sleep that favors the poorest and the rich, tossing on soft beds of down eludes, that neither hoarded wealth nor medicine can force. In the cool mountain air, by cloud clusters covered, the ascent they resumed. After arduous labor, within sight of the palace they reached. that out of a tall rock, with roots stuck deep in earth, was carved. Within a courtyard they saw, by a few chambers surrounded, in the courtyard was a tank, with water filled, by a few steps approached. Around were growing mountain trees, walnut and others, bearing delicious fruit of the hills. From this steep height their own abode, like ant heaps, looked. The stream, the valleys, and the paths, like those a map's picture made. Below were sailing clouds. After resting a while, secret of the fairy palace, they resolved to penetrate. Chapter 12. Inside the Fairy Palace. Inside the fairy palace, of massive workmanship, a granite staircase they had now to ascend, which Raj with courage faced, eager to view the female who on her lord had set eyes. Radha the maid, fear-gripped in this eerie place, thought death was near. As up the staircase they came into view a wide courtyard, amid which was a tank full of crystal-clear water, a spot that to them brought pictures of Vaikunth. Sequestered, quiet, joy-cooled, grew around it fruit-bearing trees that without labor came to hand. Said Raj, "Any day would I give up the state and authority here to come and in peace spend my days." Within which a courtyard smaller, by chambers girded, whereon a throne of bojh leaves sat the fairy deep in absorption, her forehead red with ecstasy of meditation, though advanced in years. In Pada Masan, in Samadhi, she sat, motionless, like a statue chiseled of marble. Behind her, where she sat, was fixed a slab. On it superscribed the holy Ik Oankar. Carved also was Holy Guru Arjan's vision of a life devoted and happy that ran this wise. Were anyone to live in a tattered hut, clothes torn, without caste or status, wandering in the wild, devoid of helper, friend, substance, figure, and relations, king of the world should he yet be reckoned. Should his heart with love of the Lord be drenched by the dust of feet of such a one, by divine grace comes liberation. Beneath inscribed the name, Sodat Singh, the holy congregation slave. At sight of the words was Raj transported to her lord, whose figure at her constantly glanced through these. By the side of the fairy in Samadhi fell Raj into Samadhi too, that struck Radha with wonder, who too into deep thought fell, making with the rapt absorbed the third. At this spot, hallowed by the Guru's holy word, sat these three into absorption fallen, their selves in meditation upwards ascended, as air from a vessel that with water is filled. All grossness shed was here the state of holy poise. For long in this state they kept, disturbed neither by heat nor noxious insect, nor by importunate callers. Nagging anxiety or sleep that inevitably is shaken, in the meantime came a female pigeon there, that messages from Sodat Singh used to bring, and after fluttering, in the absorbed fairy's lap, descended. At this was the fairy shaken awake, and behold, by her side were two figures into attitudes of Samadhi fallen. The pigeons cooing shook awake Raj and Radha. Opening their eyes, the fairy they beheld. As Holy Guru Arjan's Bhavan Akri, she recited from the measure, Gaudi. On hearing the tone and chanting of her utterance, fell Raj at her feet. She said, "Blessed is thy birth, who into dark Kalajug, Satajug, has brought. No fairy thou, but the very image of devoted love." At this sweet speech, the other made reply, "A thoughtless, noxious worm was I, whom a true disciple of the holy Guru Nanak's exalted." Raj, in fair words, becoming, first begged forgiveness for intrusion into her secluded spot, then begged to be told the name of him who her transformation had brought about. With a smile, replied the fairy, "Know, thou who art the Guru's humble devotee, no secret shall I make of his name. He is one in the very image of the Lord, a devotee of aspect blessing. Sodat Singh, his name." This avowal to the Rani's eyes brought tears of joyful memories, and blessed herself for sight of one who by her Lord had so been exalted. The fairy, at this entire embrace and closing Raj, was in joyous ecstasy at sight of one who the noble Sodat Singh's helpmate was. "Blessed am I," said she, "at thy sight, that to me his very image hast brought." With feelings of love into each other they melted, like two arrows at one target meeting, or eyes twin at one vision directed. Thus absorbed they remained, till Raj made query, "How came you here, sister? How in this sequestered spot your lodging took?" Chapter 13. Story of the Fairy Palace. To the Rani's query, the lady secluded replied, "This spot, sister, that you see, in ancient days was a Buddhist monastery. Here came a disciple of the Buddha, and finding the spot ideal for meditation, settled here. This temple he persuaded a king to make, that from solid rock is hewn. This tank with rainwater is filled, that seldom gets exhausted. Above is also a spring. Planted in this place are fruit trees. There, behold, a recumbent Buddha statue, in meditation, hand in benediction raised. Thus passed long ages, till Jainism in this area spread. The Jains took over the place, and beside the Buddha placed Varadhman statue. Years passed, and the cult of Varadhman by Shaktas was supplanted. There see you the figure of Shakti. Then came Gorakh, and yogis held this spot. There see you the Gorakh figure, in Padmasana seated, begging bowl in hand, a reed mat by its side. The yogis, for fear of Rajputs, a Krishna figure made, along with the Devis. Thus was here an amalgam of faiths, Shaiva, Vaishnaviti, and others. At this inaccessible spot arrived rare practitioners of yoga, who through yoga praxis subdued the physical self. Here came to enter Samadhi, seeking immortality. My father, turning yogi, got ears slit, earrings wore, and in dizziness with the world, renunciation practiced. Yoga now having declined, my father for the yogis revulsion felt. Consuming liquor, the occult they practiced, inspiring fear. At last, guided by Bangarnath, the yogi abbot, this sequestered spot he sought, and to articles of yoga practice gave himself up. Here practiced he Hatha Yoga and all its rigorous praxis, with Nyoli, Vasti, Toti, Neti, and the rigorous of Pranayam. Thus spent my father a considerate time, forgetful of the world and family. My mother, in deep distress, sorrowed for him, when I was still a babe. At last, in search after him, our home she left, and to Bangarnath made approach. Through devoted service, his approval she earned and learnt of this spot. My mother, bearing rigors of hunger and my father's indifference, yet persisted. Came winter with snow and freezing blasts. This took my mother's life, and by her body I alone was left wailing. Hearing my cries, came out father, and seeing my state in freezing cold, took me within. Pity moving his heart, me he nurtured. As I grew up, yoga to me he imparted. All the asanas and articles of praxis, till an adept I became. Came old age, enfeebling father's limbs. Yoga no longer could he practice, and his body all was pain. At this he cried, in regret for choosing the yoga path. As you today, Sodat Singh, here once chanced to come. Him, my father, with cordiality received. Both on the supreme objective held converse. My father from him learned Bhakti, the synthesis of Janam and Virag, and the secret of Raj Yoga. To me, too, he graciously expounded the secrets of Bhakti, resignation to the will divine, Nam, and joy in God. Often after this would he come, our spiritual life to nourish, till the holy Granth he installed here, Amrit to us he administered. Now the noble stage of Saj, spiritual poise we entered, and turned we Gurmukhs from age and decline exempt. Came a day when my father, rich in years, to Sachkhand departed, saved from the dark yoga praxis. Sodat Singh himself his pyre lit. He too, alas, his mortal life departed. To my great regret, no service could I to this great benefactor render, who showed us the light by the holy gurus revealed. With this, the fairy, wrapped in thought, into silence, fell. Chapter 14. A Dream. The Rani by her side sitting, both into deep meditation fell, the fairy recalling the beneficence from Sodat Singh received and the love of his wife now by her side sitting. In the dewy depth of night, Raj to her related the story of the Kalar Raja's letter. Then narrated she a dream that on the previous night she had. As on the palace's terrace she sat, viewing above the sky, star-studded, resplendent with countless suns, fell she into wonderment, recalling the holy Guru Nanak's hymn of Aarti, wherein the sky has he likened to a salver, and the stars to ritual lamps, before the deity lit. Thus, says the holy Guru, the universe to the creator Aarti performs. Wrapped in this contemplation, by the cool air lulled, into sleep she fell, and a wonder beheld. What saw she? Earth and sky topsy-turvy appeared. Earth appeared blue as the sky, with gem-like states overspread. The earth, a veritable salver, appeared, with ritual lamps burning row on row, as in a holy temple. Thus dreaming, beheld I the farthest stars, to which had I ascended. As the top of it I reached, a rock I beheld, rounded, smooth, white, of moon-like sheen. A sign like a door in it appeared. At this door I touched, within was revealed a temple. Illumined, cool, pure milk-white, its walls and floor and ceiling mercury-like, glistening, as though with lightning plastered. Within it, at worship, were men and women, as though molded of light. Illumination fell there as from a spring, a waterfall. Worshippers saw I there in congregation, in holy divan, where were rising strains of holy music, with the Guru Shabd, lauding the infinity divine. As with eyes wide open in wonder I beheld, was seated in that company my Lord's spouse, looking as though to the congregation discoursing. This sight, with unquenchable thirst, I drank. At a distance I stood, yearning tears of love to shed, with these his loved feet to wash. Oh, that him I could touch, to my bosom clasp. At thus I stood, my Lord, all compassion, grace, from his seat arose, and to where I stood came. As at his feet I fell, me he raised, uttering words of blessing, that in wonder wrapped I construed not, but a little while after thus could I make out, this a sphere of infinite beauty, where the devotees of God infinitely laud him, their love draws me now and then from such kind. Here should you learn the secret of laudation, as says the holy Guru, to whomsoever laudation has he granted, is king of kings. With these into silence he fell, sudden, as my eyes open, earth and sky to their former stations returned. With this felt I the gross body's weight, like ox to heavy wagon yoked. From afar I heard the holy Guru's hymn in awesome measure, breathing humility before the divine spouse, in manner of devoted dedication, female. Chapter 15. A Night at the Fairy Palace. In converse profound the two engaged, deep in reverence, from each other eager to learn. As war on day and dusk descended, Radha, to her mistress ever faithful, importuned, "Mistress mine, leave we now for home. Comes the night full of dangers from animals of the wild. Down this deep mountain, arduous is the path. There, behold, shepherds, herdsmen, and all others. Homewards are returning." But this importunity moved not Raj, who to the place attached to leave it was loath. Now the fairy, the saint of the place, in wisdom profound to Raj turned, saying, "Dear Raj, great devotee that you are, and to your dear Lord's memory attached, I reckon it befits not your state here your time to while away. You are no mere female like thousands of others, but a queen on whom the weal of the populace depends. On your shoulders lies this burden. From it behoves you not to flee. With love and devotion the call of duty answer. There lies wisdom's path. To discard that is like the whirlwind to whirl about. Love, no sister dear, is not madness. Love on ideals keeps us fixed. Should you turn recluse, dear Raj, and suppressing faculties in a corner sit, at the portal divine no acceptance shall you meet. The holy Guru's teaching is liberation through duty. Quaff you of the joy of love, but the duty laid on your shoulders perform. Thus shall you nobly cherish your love's memory. Thus shall come to you great repute. To this Rajmund replies, Sister, in love is my life centered, to his memory am I wedded. His am I while living, his when this body to ashes shall turn. To guide me on this path, to him supplication I make, tell me no more. At this avowal, the fairy, overwhelmed in a fit of ecstasy, at her feet fell. Rautha, too, at the scene lost in feeling, yet of home was mindful, and reminded her mistress of her mother's wailing, and their absence distressed. At last, to Rautha's entreaties yielding, Rajmund revolved the downward journey to make, saying, The world each moment beholds meeting and parting, part we must. Chapter 16. The Fairy Palace. A Secret. The fairy, loving, farewell, bade them, enjoining upon Raj, her mother, to cherish, distracted now in her absence. Then, as parting gift, a packet she handed her, a keepsake, cherished from Sodat Singh. In it was a scroll, Sodat Singh's writing, his answers to spiritual queries, the seekers after light to him had addressed. This, adjured the fairy, a leisure shall you read, many naughty questions thereby the world shall you find resolved. This packet in red cloth tied, Raj with the utmost reverence grasped, eyes downcast, hands folded, kneeling humbly. Then on her head she placed it, as object sacred and most precious. Then, while time fled and dusk fell, the fairy, anxious that before dark home they return, revealed to Raj yet another secret, exclusive to the initiated alone revealed. There, on the dark forest's edge, southward, by the hillside, where flowery trees and forest rise, rightward are huge boulders. Amid these gushes of spring, by terrifying rocks flanked, there a sole rock, milk-white, rises, where grow glowing spicy plants. There, leftward of the waters, a slab, which, when moved, a doorway shall reveal. As you enter, a dark spot shall you behold, beyond which, a dozen steps across, is another door. An echo shall rise, to which answer you, Akol Niranjan. As thrice this you repeat, shall the door open, which you cross, repeating, Sapang, Sapang. As forward you go, a Sikh of the Guru shall guide you, where Satsang, the holy congregation, is held. Thought the devotion intoxicated joy. This tradition by Sodat Singh was begun, as the Guru's message in the hill area spread. These all are householders, workers, and after congregation is over, to their day's tasks return. Thus, Sodat Singh, holy himself, perfect in devotion, the cult of holiness spread. Then parted Raj, in profoundest gratitude, from the fairy, whom Sodat Singh's touch, from love of the world to her objectives, returned, and stilling her heart's turmoil, brought peace and poise. That discarding worldly props, God's sole prop she sought, a saint, a sannyasi turning. Hers the solitude of the poised self, as by holy Guru Arjan in measure Basant affirmed. The Levy. The mother in Raj's absence, mysterious, clueless, wept and wailed, and to the holy Guru prayed in deep submission for safe return of her child. At long last, when after absence of a long day did Raj return, was a mother's joy boundless. Much clarity she dispensed, feeding the poor, happy was each soul. Then asked she, the Rani, what befell her during her absence, which she in every particular told her, but bearing the secret cave, as to the fairy promised. Thereafter, both into deep sound sleep fell, in each other's arms. Came morning, wherein was Raj put in mind of the holy Guru's yearning in Maru for the divine beloved sight at early dawn. Beholding her own state bereft, much she wailed, with rise of day and daylight were her thoughts absorbed. Rautha, rising likewise, ordered the bath tank for her mistress to be filled. First took she bath herself for service to her royal mistress. The Rani then bathed, dressed, and to her limbs applied fragrance. Thereafter, to pay homage to the statue and the sepulchre, she repaired. Adjourned her mother, hold today the levy, as befits a ruler. On your head wear the crown and aigret, said Raj. The lord of the aigret and the plume is one only, the holy Guru Govind. Befits it not another these emblems to assume. My wedded lord, too, their assumption eschewed. How befits it me? Admonished her mother, wear you then the pearl string and the bar robes, But our approaches, herein delay not. Rather than on her mistress put the equipment, splendid, golden, dazzling to the eye, decked as statue and fane. The senior Rani then to the throne room conducted her, where were gathered the nobles. All with folded hands received her, and benedictions showered. Raj, splendid and jewelly, by her maids surrounded the Durbar room approached. As her late lord's throne she beheld, felt she tremors of grief. As the senior Rani admonished her, herself to compose, the Durbar offering she received from the assembled nobles. The royal routine did she perform, as in her predecessor's days, as was dismissed the Durbar to their apartments. Mother and daughter appeared, the Rani full of grief, at remembrance of her lord, who once had reigned where now she sat. At last came sleep that her limbs oppressed. Chapter 19. Keepsakes. The Rana's Epistles. As came morning, the Rani thus instructed Radha, "Come you, by ruse, to the chamber that you know." This was where was kept reverently the holy Granth, which entering, the Rani herself swept the floor in reverent devotion. Then spread she the carpet, arranged the robes the holy book to cover. Thereafter, flower vases she filled, and the book installed as reverent custom required. Then, into the kitchenette going, the sweet offering, Graprasad, herself she cooked, reciting over it the Japji. Thereafter, in reverent attitude standing by the book, prayed she, "Holy Divine Master, immaculate art thou, in all beings pervasive, beyond evil, impurity, and duality. I am a thoughtless sinner, Maya gripped, pride filled, unworthy with my foul hands even to touch the scripture that thy light enshrines. The person manifest of the gurus, I, a female of little understanding and of actions unworthy, for thy sight yearn, that pray grant me. My faults manifold forgive, I that am thine, thy erring handmaid am I, yet thine own. In thy grace grant me sight of the holy word, the guru's embodiment. To me, writhing like a fish, grant me the blessing thy service to perform, as come the rain cloud sent by heavenly grace. The dust laid in air to wash clean, to make it cool, pure. Even so, make me pure, joy cooled." With this, the holy book she opened, and for an hour out of it read. Then, with due ceremony closing it, the Ardas she recited. Then sought she leave of the scripture to behold the cherished treasure of her husband's letters. As the bundle she untied, several epistles drew her sight, that brought tears of recognition and grief to her eyes. The first to a sorrowing mother was sent, Garam Gaur, whose heroic son, called Sher Singh, by the Turks in battle was captured and done to death. To her was conveyed deep sympathy in her loss, yet in her grief consoling her with the thought of God's grace for one whose child his approval had won, dying a martyr for the fatherland and for faith. "You are the mother," said the epistle, "not of him alone who is gone, but of the whole bunt. Evanescent malady bringing are the world's pleasures. This bitter grief bear that the Lord to you has sent. Take me, mother, as thy son too, serving the bunt's cause that to your departed son was dear. Near to thee I cannot come, thrown close to the mountains, away from our homeland. Such humility from one who was crowned monarch and ever of service and sacrifice thought deeply the Rani's heart moved." The next epistle that came to the Rani's hand to the sister of Daru Singh, the martyr, was addressed, condoling her brother's demise, calling her his sister, sympathizing deeply in her grief, calling blessing on the mother that she bore, that such a brother and such a sister, "Your brother," said the letter, "after heroic deeds nobly performed, the realm eternal of God has entered. Your mother in Sikhism truly molded was the tenth master's dedicated daughter, who exhorted her brave son unflinchingly the guru to serve. To her teaching true, to in the Turk's bondage he fell, then to the last lived a devoted Sikh. His life he gave up, but flinched not from the faith. You, his brave sister, and your heroic mother, his sacrifice without a groan would have borne. Sister, as ever to the Lord's will resign yourself, for such as we are not the pleasures and concerns of the world, but sacrifice and crusading in God's way. In the Holy Guru's words, was your brother the Lord's own champion, wrestling ever to win his fights. May the Guru grant you to tread your brother's noble path. This from your other brother, Surat Singh, whose greetings to all our brethren in the Panth, to all the mothers who shoulder to shoulder with their brothers the Guru's cause are serving. At this, Raj prayed that by blessing of her brothers and sisters in the Panth, waging holy fight, may the light of faith on her own unworthy self fall, and as stone with a boat, may she be saved. To the next epistle then she turned, the third, whose theme was death. Addressed to her and to mankind generally, it averred, no fright in death lies. After each death is a new birth. Afflicted, must man not his own life take. This to no fulfillment leads. Best is the fruit ripened on the branch. After such death is life impurity laden, made to sink like wood, made heavy with lead. Life from impurity freed light shall remain and rise to the heights above. Raj, as its contents she read, at her lord's noble wisdom marveled. And the next epistle was contained answer to a hard query. What like is the pathway to ascent? Hard or easy? This, friend, to me expound. No, said the answer. On this path nowhere shall you meet descent. Hard, steep is this path. Lies on this way a resting place? Was the next query. On this path nowhere is a resting place. All is movement, ascent. Next to the query, what in case of exhaustion? Would such a one inevitably be ruined? No resting place, no respite from movement is there. To escape exhaustion, keep viewing straight the objective, taking off the eye, never. This exhaustion shall take off, and the courage revive. Full of admiration for its lofty wisdom, this epistle she placed back, and the fifth took up. This one, true greatness defined. Greatness lies not in pride, in raising and arrogance the head high, but in bearing humility. To be great is to be like the lofty mountain that on its head bears frost, snow, and rain, and after sends it down the plains to irrigate, the earth to make fruitful. From the water that remains rears its lofty trees that mankind's purposes serve. Furthermore, on the mountains grow herbs, medicinal, restorative. Grew on the mountains breast manifold fruits, delicious, all to serve others, sans charge or tax. Yet ends not the mountain's beneficence here. Splitting itself, pebble, stones, and sand it becomes, that manifold blessings bring. Stones burnt become lime, man's edifices to Vedic. Mines the fountain in its bosom cherishes, yielding gold, silver, iron, copper, tin, and numerous metals more. Stones precious, of beauty wondrous it yields, diamond, ruby, sapphire, emerald, and others of their ilk. As the mountain source of bounty, such should the lofty be, conferring benefits, sacrificing self. Friend, be thou bountiful too, seek not anything of the world, of your giving be not proud, give and seek not the recompense. Rise not like the kite to fall, or like the vulture that on carcasses descends. Be lofty as the beauteous moon, the effulgent sun, the pole star that unshakable is, like the cloud that life-giving water brings. Of such says the Holy Guru in Sukhmani, benefactors of all, annulers of suffering, saviors of the world are such. Those heeding not such teaching, the world shall leave us as better, not than grass or thistles. Deeply enlightened, Raj then picked up another paper, richly done in color. This a philosophical import was, dilating on merit and its garnering. Garner merit, it exhorted, keeping it to thyself as fragrance in the flower. To the highest point shall merit thus cherished carry, entry granting you in the court divine. Should merit be sedulously cultivated with end in view, repute to obtain oneself to blow about. Alien will be its pleasure, insatiable its pursuit. Much envy will it excite. calumniators provoking. With repute thus garnered, forbidden is entry into Sachkhand, the realm eternal. This coin there no currency has. Hard it is pursuit of repute to discard. Yet with merit, genuine of itself it comes, to the bearer's face lending radiance. Merit like the musk-land fragrance ever imparts. Poor it is to sell merit for lucre, that the pursuer demeans for feeding joy. Invaluable is merit, the holy Guru thus affirmed. Thus to expend merit is like the pack ox to be, to oneself bringing decline. Merit kept within the self is like a tar in a file, fragrant, or like a lamp lit indoors, whose light scattered shall be, should the doors be opened. To seek merit, to sell, is Maya pursuit, impurity bringing. True merit consists in oneself to expend, as lamp lighting lamp, incurring not loss. Thus, with wisdom instructed, to the next, the seventh she turned. This still profounder issues raised, of Nam, devotion to the name divine, and the doctrine of Janam, Gnosis. Know by renunciation alone comes not realization or fulfillment in the Lord. One born upon Gnosis is still in egoism's sphere. The pursuit of Nam beyond mere knowledge lies. It is to be devoted, above disputants, clever. These disputatious ones never to the Lord have felt drawn, never non-attachment practiced. Janan takes not man outside of Maya's sphere, within the world of discrimination still keeping him. No, where egoism abides, Nam there may not be, as Nam in the self takes abode to the bare Nam. The Lord, it lifts the seeker. Whoever discarding the holy Nam takes himself to be image of the Supreme, knows not the Guru's teaching. While egoism in the self abides, should the Nam, the praxis, as is discarded egoism, attainment it becomes, indispensable either way. No, Nam to its divine bearer joins the seeker, or renunciation, the recluse's life, the next missive turn. No, of two kinds is renunciation. The first is from the human world to make retreat, to seek a mountain cave or waste, away from human company to abide, to be one's own companion, alone, sequestered. Such retreat is wild, joyless. The other is retreat amid concerns, endeavor of the world, yet not by it to be overwhelmed, to seek joy in nature. This also is to be a recluse, but hard is this way. The way of the seeker of spiritual joy, and not the stubborn-willed ascetics. Some turning recluses, yet stray not far from human habitations, their daily food from the nearby village deriving, such from life struggle, flee, claiming to be recluses, yet on the ordinary householders depend. Such true recluses may not be called. Higher than these is a damsel wedded, to her consort faithful in household chores engaged, to all sincere and faithful. Such also the man whose mind wanders not, but to the Lord is attuned, his worldly concerns alienating him not from him. Such the true recluse is, as affirms the holy Granth. The true recluse is he whose mind in poise is resting. Such as comes night, sleep, not while the world sleeps, but in meditation on the Lord engage. These amid concerns of family and tribe, yet are recluses. Rarest of the rare are such. Their physical body to them is the soil, wherein the seed of prayer and meditation they sow, that in the Lord's demesne does flower. In the world are such to well-doing given, the world's pleasures they lay by, joy of devotion to feel. Such the true secret of retirement from the world is. In the next epistle was adumbrated the philosophy of pleasure. In pleasure lies the dynamic of man's life. For pleasure and action, he engages. Sharp, attractive are the pleasures of passion, sweet to taste, but sad is the end of such pleasures, turning the mind impure and feeble. Or, as says the holy Guru Nanak, into maladies falls the seeker of pleasures. Glamorous like Kusumba is the color of pleasure. Appetite and languor inducing. Pleasure from outside is not derived, but from within ourselves arises. As said long back, the sage Bhartari not do we experience pleasures. Pleasures experience us. Higher than pleasures of the body is the joy of holy congregation, of chanting hymns of divine praise. This joy from bodily joy the mind turns away. Even in pursuit of holiness lie certain temptations that man must transcend. When the mind in pure joy in God is absorbed, on the path of truth persisting, ultimately the destination it attains. Then pleasures all their attraction lose. Then is lost the lure of life and fear of death, as also of pleasures of paradise. Then is the self God intoxicated, yet enlightened, the lamp illumination aglitter. Dear listener, discard therefore joys of flesh. Into love for the timeless Lord enter, discarding all other pleasures. This tasteless rock you lick. One tasting this pleasure is the true hedonist. One caught in worldly pleasures is like the fly in molasses caught. The next two missives, short and brief, on other philosophical issues turned. To enter the awareness of God, must man his own self lose, his egoism. This, an esoteric secret. Anyone discovering the self, on a taking stand, the whole universe around him may revolve. How did the cosmos originate? Cogitated, the next. Love at its innermost center lies. The Lord, attributeless, above desire, love is his essence, and love his effulgence spreads. Nothing he seeks, yet love even on him may cast its spell. This paradox seek to resolve. Beings he creates, beyond need remaining, yet in their sight feels joy. Love is his essence, that he receives and gives. In Jap, the holy Guru Gobind thus phrased it, in all directions is harmony, is he pervasive. The last of its missives, longest of all, exposition of concept of love contained. Love is the cause of creation, love its prop and sustenance. The immortal Lord himself is love, real, various, and beloved. Its light on all objects, subtle and gross shows. Subtle itself, the essence of love, is palpable forms, is manifested. The first form of love is the Creator, who is preserver and destroyer both. Loving his creation, is he immaculate, supreme joy. Of his creation, such to him bear love, as of impurity of egoism are relieved. Such in him are merged. The perfection of such love is in the holy Guru Nanak manifested. And various other teachers of mankind, too, it shows. Threefold its function, to unite the seeker to the Lord, to impart joy and love and beneficence towards others to inspire. In the heart free from Maya, as compassion it sits, with reverence imbuing it, such love spiritual strength imparts, inspiring devotion, first towards Guru Nanak and ultimately the Lord. The bearer thereof, Gurmukh, is called. One God word facing. Of such love, one form is love for the self. Now, no way a selfish act but the urge to impurity, for dying oneself in God. Another form still love is love of charity. In the triad, Nam, Dhan, Ishnan, is Dhan a sovereign quality. Noble is charity, should it selfless be. Such charity and spiritual realization is ardent. The passion to do good is another form of love that all creation views as particles of the essence divine. Love lower down the human relationships encourages, such as parents' love for offspring, of brother and sister, man and wife, as also of lovers romantic. Attachment for objectives selfish is gross, a perversion of love that suffering and bitterness brings on. Love declining, a pursuit of pleasure becoming passion to visible objects as it attaches. One crossing limits into evil courses it leads, bringing on forgetfulness of self. Another form of love is that among the brute creation subsisting, each to his species confined, mute, subconscious, almost such in grossness is the love that gross minds for each other feel. Next is the form that vegetation love may be called. Plants, growing apart, yet to each other are drawn, uprooted from the garden when taken away, the pangs of separation they bear, sometimes even withering, the sun, light, and heat these love, and to water are drawn, lifeless objects too, a kind of love feel, the attraction of matter, that the universe sustains, such attraction of iron for the magnet, such particle, such attraction has and exercises, averred be sage, Kajanoth, the earth without a prop moves, without palpable support. Thus also move the constellations and the moon. Thus is the entire cosmos sustained. Love is the force that so at the universal base lies. In lifeless objects and vegetation in the animal world is love the informing force. The human world, too, by it is inspired. Various forms it assumes. The holy devotees of God, too, it inspires. As by the holy guru affirmed in Jup, in all directions is harmony, is he pervasive. As came she to the end of the epistles, into deep reverence she fell, and to the creator Akalpurik rendered thanks for guiding her aright. Then from the holy guru Granth reading a text, the book she folded up, and prasad food offering she made. This to Radha she made over, for distribution to inmates of the palace. An ecstasy of devotion thus passed her days, and this was the pang of grief drowned. Chapter 20. The Conflict Resolved. Holy Music. With everything over, Raj into deep thought fell again, and grief overcame her. Death that her love had snatched by hard name she called, defying it her love's memory to Ephes. Like one addicted to wine, missing it now, was she restless, yearning, overcoming her. Her mother, in the meantime, thought to bring her relief, her mind from grief to distract. First was called in a scholar, a pandit, who philosophically argued, this world is false, unreal. Unreal he whom you mourn, unreal yourself, false, false your love, forget it all. To the formation of relationships is there no end, that form and bubble like snap. The wise to all this are indifferent. Such logic to Raj's mind, love imbued, sounded hollow. Her beloved unreal, as this logic chopper averred. A saint he was, in midst of the evanescent world, as the holy guru affirmed, immutable, eternal. Real her love for him, be the world as false as this man affirmed. His exhortations she rejected. Next her mother a yogi called in, one in Hatha Yoga, an adept, her daughter the path to show. His theme, sense control, inner concentration, a sit-eared yogi, his message, renunciation. To Raj, unacceptable sounded. Renunciation of what? How? To turn mendicant, as did Gopichand and Parthari, kings turned yogis. This prospect, instantly she spurned. Love, too, he declared is false. Forget, efficit. Rejecting him, too, to her departed love, she made supplication, the true light to show her. As deep in thought she sat, came running to her the royal maid Radha, sister of her soul. She announced, Madam, 3/6 of our late lord's land of Punjab have here arrived. Music, their skill, the guru's hymns they sing. Itinerant preachers, here a night they stay, departing tomorrow. Seeing an instant light, the Rani implored Radha, these holy choristers, to call to her, who the solace and joy the Guru's word would bring. Soon the three came, and bowing reverently to the Rani, a true Sikh spouse, greetings they offered, in style that among the Sikhs prevailed, with fateh, hands folded. Then, at the Rani's entreaty, kirtan they performed, chanting the Guru's word, the instruments they tuned, and resounding with holy melody from Guru Arjan's var. In Ramkali they sang, expression of deep devotion, and self-surrender solely to the Lord. Absorbed in ecstasy of the theme, with reiteration of line and syllable, transmuted to music itself, singing they continued. With this music was the Rani transported, her spirit heavenward ascended. The image resplendent of holy Guru Gobind, Lord of the Plume, before her mind's eye was formed. As sang on the choristers into Samadhi they fell, the instruments from their hands dropping. Around the Rani's mind and in illumination spread, an atmosphere all of beauty compact, the universe, the divine harmony appear to chant. Thus passed some time, till all from ecstasy emerged. Now came the evening, time the Guru's Raras to chant. Fairy songsters from heaven appeared the holy chant to utter. Earth, fire, air, Indra with the deities, pandits, rishis, denizens of Swarga, earth and the netherworld, heroes mighty, the universe entire, all in a universal chorus seemed engaged. Then chanted the choristers from the holy ground another hymn, Charan Sharan Dayal Thakur Ananahi Jai. Breathing fervor of devotion, surrender to self, to the Lord. At close of Rara, saw the Rani, all holy denizens of the sky, hands folded to the Guru's hymn, making obeisance, till flashed on her the theme that to her revealed the secret of the holy Guru's message. In holy congregation comes fulfillment and liberation. The night coming on in the palace, the choristers stayed. As came dawn, the Varanasa measured, they chanted, heralding the morning service. This to the Rani further solace brought with joy and fulfillment. Holy music to her spouse united her. Her thirsting yearning assuaged, and to her the true secret revealed of the spiritual life.